This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana as we close the week with a special treat. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Our guest for much of the hour is Smiley Gray Anders Jr., who is celebrating 42 consecutive years of writing his column, which appears 6 days a week in The Advocate, now / Picayune. And for 42 years, it's been a staple in our community and now all across South Louisiana. People get pearls of wisdom from Smiley and his readers. And he was kind enough yesterday to mention our show in his column, saying at 9 a.m. Friday, I'll join the extraordinary interviewer, Jim Inkster, on Talk Louisiana, his award-winning show on public radio, WRKF 89.3 FM. We'll present our annual analysis of major world issues and celebrate a milestone for this column. You can also hear it at WRKF.org. And he goes on and says, I always enjoy chatting with the affable Jim, although in recent years he started referring to me as the venerable Smiley Anders. Well, Smiley has joined us continuously for many years on two dates, June 4th, the anniversary of his column, and on November 20th, his birthday. And he was born in the year of 1937 in the great city of Natchez, which makes him 83 years young. So, Smiley, if I do my math correctly, you have now logged more than half your life writing this column. 42 is more than half of 83.
Yes. Actually, we're still younger than Tom Brady, though. I don't feel too bad about the age. I tell Lady Catherine that I really feel 42 instead of 83. But I'm still, still doing it, and I'm still enjoying it. Matter of fact, wouldn't do it otherwise, so. I am at retirement age,
Well, no signs of slowing down for the venerable Smiley Gray Anders, but Tom Brady, you mentioned, he won Super Bowls in 2002, 4, 5, 15, 17, 19, and 21. That's six of them. And Smiley, six times, was awarded first place awards from the National Society of Newspaper Columnists for the items category, 85, 96, 97, 2004, 2005, 2006, and he won it so many times that they quit giving out the award because he was winning it every year. And so he is somebody who is treasured not only here but all across our country. 877-217-5757 if you'd like to engage the remarkable Smiley Gray Anders Jr. Greg in Alexandria is first up. Greg, you are on Talk Louisiana. Please turn your radio down, Greg, and we will have you in short order for Smiley Anders. Hi, Greg. You are on the air, Greg.
Thank you. Just wanted to say that I enjoyed his column today about vaccinations, and he needs to put out there the promo of the song along with Louisiana's incentive of hit me with your best shot. I'd like to know what y'all think about that.
All right, Pat Benatar's hit me with your best shot. Well, what do you make of all this aversion to vaccines, Smiley? You're a man.
I think it's just stupidity to put it mildly. The doctors are saying, if you don't believe in doctors, okay, that's fine. Let's just live without them and see what happens. But, there's not really any serious argument about it, even though in the legislature there's been some really disturbing statements made that shows really kind of an alarming ignorance. But actually, it's the people who vote for these guys that I'm worried about, because they're, we know they're stupid, but that many people not to do it. I don't feel very strongly about it,
But, no, it doesn't sound like it. But you're a man of 83 years who's had some health challenges, as most people do in life, and you've conquered them, and yet you were not reluctant to get a vaccine.
I've had COVID, and I don't want to have it again. From what I gather, there's always a chance that it could come back, even if you've had the vaccine. So it's better to be. I mean, I still wear the mask and had everything. I'm really a fanatic about it. I don't want to get that stuff again. I'm not as robust as I was. And I want to hang on here a while longer.
A listener notes that the last time we talked, you were in the midst of COVID then doing a show.
Right. I was. It was November. Yeah. It was.
And you came out okay.
So I'm still on oxygen, and, which really restricts my movements a lot. And I've had to give up marathon running, for one thing, which was really a blow. But I'm hanging in there.
877-217-5757. That's your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org works as well for the remarkable Smiley Gray Anders Jr., the incomparable man who was born, as we stated, in Natchez, Mississippi. How old were you when your family moved to Baton Rouge?
I was 8. So my dad was transferred. He was with a meat company and meat packing, Swift and Company, and got transferred to Baton Rouge. And so I just stayed. Worked in Louisiana all my life, except for 2 years in Shreveport. So and then I came back down after 2 years. Worked here with the Chamber and Farm Bureau, and wound up with the Advocate. Never dreamed I'd be doing a column. I was hired to do business news. But they decided they wanted a column about nothing. And so they called me over and asked if I could write about nothing. And I said, yeah, sure. So I've been writing about nothing, 42 years.
Whose idea was it to write the column?
It was actually several editors. We had a guy, Mike Walker, who didn't stay long. He was a California guy and was familiar with the Herb Cain column in San Francisco, which is kind of the ultimate daily items column. For the Chronicle in San Francisco. And so he wanted a column like that, a daily items column. And originally I thought it was going to just be a sideline, something I did in my spare time. And then he told me, then there was a guy named Art Adams and Jim Hughes, who was executive editor. I really trusted those guys, and they convinced me that, to give it a shot and do it every day and give up the business beat, which I really enjoyed. I loved covering business news.
And for a while, even after you had the column, you would write features on businesses and always.
I used to write a lot of stuff for the Advocate magazine, Baton Rouge magazine. Norman Ferracci and I had been friends for years. He was publishing Baton Rouge magazine. I did a lot of really crazy stuff for him.
I recall.
I went to a nudist camp and did a story about that. I practiced with the LSU Tigers football team for a day. They couldn't know what to make of me out there. So really had a lot of fun doing that. And, I had reviewed a lot of concerts and Dylan and the Sex Pistols and Elvis and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how to write it beside businesses.
Well, I recall when you wrote your piece about the nudist camp, I think in Slidell, people were looking at you funny because you were wearing clothes when you arrived.
Yeah, they said I didn't have to go, bottomless. And so I came out in my swimsuit, and they were all, cavorting around the pool and playing volleyball and this kind of stuff, and riding paddle boats, and everything stopped. They looked up at me, and I realized that I had to shed my swimsuit, or I was going to really attract attention. So then I shed my swimsuit, attracted no attention at all after that. So.
Well, you're accustomed to disrobing. For many years, it was the big moment of the Gridiron Show when Smiley would appear shirtless.
We like to add a little something for the ladies there. Ronnie Stutes always had me in a ridiculous costume or semi-nude, and women seem to get a kick out of it. Some of the guys too, as a matter of fact.
Well, you arrived in Baton Rouge 76 years ago, or thereabouts, 75, 76 years ago. We've talked about this before. It was right after World War II. What was the town like at that point?
Oh, it was very, very small. I remember, though, coming from Natchez, it seemed like a metropolis. I remember our telephone number in Natchez only had 3 digits. Baton Rouge had 5, and I thought that was amazing, you know, that a town that big would have 5-digit telephone numbers. So,
and now, of course, we have a few more than 5. We'll talk more with Smiley Anders, and the number for him is 877-217-5757. We're back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. Smiley Anders is with us. His column appeared today in The Advocate, as it does 6 days a week and has for 42 years. It was June 4th, 1979, when Smiley's column debuted in The Advocate. 1979, Edwin Edwards was in his second term as governor of Louisiana. The president was James Earl Carter. The football coach at LSU was Charlie McClendon. The basketball coach was Dale Brown. The mayor of Baton Rouge was Woody Dumas. It was a long time ago. Smiley's been with us through a few coaches, mayors, presidents, and governors. And he is with us right now if you'd like to join our conversation, 877-217-5757. He's also written 2 best-selling books, The Best of Smiley and Smiley, A Laughing Matter. And he is a member of the LSU Manship School Hall of Fame. He is one of the best in the history of Louisiana journalism. And his column is probably one of the most, I don't think probably, it is one of the most read parts of the newspaper, and that's why he survived a change in ownership and is still going relatively strong at the age of 83 years old. Again, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Mike McMurray writes, Smiley, if you remember Grumpy's and Alessa's Drive-Ins located in Baton Rouge, said they had memorable malts and burgers. Do you remember those?
I remember Alessa's. Grumpy's, I think it was in North Baton Rouge, about Schumer High School. I believe that's the one. I never went to that one that much, but Alessa's was known for its curly cues. And also, it was right there at Foster and Florida Boulevard, and there was really almost nothing out beyond that. It's hard to believe now. There used to be drag races at night, and you could sit there at Alessa's and watch the cars go down Florida Boulevard. They called it the extension between the traffic circle and Foster, Florida Boulevard. And it was pretty desolate out there. And guys would run their cars from there to the traffic circle, and that was a big deal to watch the cars. Never saw anybody get stopped. I'm sure they did.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, those were simple times.
Well, now we're reading daily about terrible crimes, and some in places that weren't thought to be a bit safer than others. And in Baton Rouge, we live in a violent community, let's face it. And the murder at Fairway View, I bet you spent many nights, triple murder, including a infant child. You spent many nights at the old Fairway View Club, didn't you?
Oh, my gosh. I went in. Some of the best burgers in town. Really a good little hangout. Great late night bar, and kind of secluded. A lot of people didn't even know it was there. It was way at the back of the apartment complex. I think it burned or something years ago. But yeah, that was a fun place.
Mm-hmm.
And
a listener notes that it was owned by the same people who owned the Catery, and that one burned on New Year's Eve of 2009. Yeah, you remember the Catery, don't you?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Yeah, I did remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
I did remember that they both, you know, had the same ownership.
Yeah, well, there were some spots, and there still are, but what were some of your favorite hangouts back in the day?
Oh, well, then as well as now is the pastime. I kind of grew up there when I was went through LSU, living on pizzas and roast beef, po' boys, root beer, sitting at the bar chatting with Joe Lipp, the great bartender there. So I had some great stories out of there. And still go to the pastime. My wife and I like to go out. We've beginning to venture out a little bit. We like to go to Mansour's for the seafood, great seafood place. And we go there. We go to Bruce Chris once in a while when we save up and, you know, get a second mortgage on the house or something like that.
Yeah, and another listener notes you've lived in Spanish Town for many years, and I think your house is about to celebrate its 100th anniversary.
As a matter of fact, it's very perceptive of you. Next year, it was built in 1922, and it's a raised bungalow, so have some space underneath. And the guy had a Maxwell car, and didn't want to park on the street, so he built his house up so he could park his car under the house. You don't see many Maxwells these days.
No, you and Lady Catherine.
I think Jack Benny had a Maxwell, as a matter of fact.
Did he? Yeah. 877-217-5757. HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on with Smiley.
Good morning. Smiley, my father got transferred here in 1945 and went to work for Nabisco down there on South 14th. If memory serves me correctly, we first started living on Boyd Avenue, which is now Spanish Town. Is that not correct?
Did I live on Boyd Avenue?
No, he asked if Boyd became Spanish Town.
Oh, yeah, I think so, right. Spanish Town was Boyd Avenue at one time, I think.
Yeah.
I'm on University Walk, so was named for that when LSU was there with, you know, near the side of the Capitol now. But yeah, it was Boyd.
Well,
I'm pretty sure.
Smiley went to Estruma, and in the day, that was perhaps the preeminent high school in Baton Rouge, and there were some other good ones, Baton Rouge High and others. But Baton Rouge High was your big rival, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. We had quite a time. We would actually, a couple of times, we filled up Memorial Stadium for the game, and then we had a playoff for the district championship. So we actually played them twice in 1 year, and at least one occasion, maybe two, we had to move the game to Tiger Stadium because we had filled up Memorial Stadium the game before, and they knew there was going to be even more demand for that. So it's quite a thing when, Memorial Stadium is pretty big, but for two high schools to generate that kind of audience, really something.
A listener notes that LSU and Southern are slated to play, not this year. I think it's next year, and football. And that took a long time to put together, but it's overdue, and that should be quite a spectacle, Smiley.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be kind of conflicted on that one because Lady Catherine got her master's from Southern. And so, of course, I went to LSU, so we're going to be we're going to really have some conflicts. That's going to be an interesting game for us.
September 10th, 2022. Mark that one. That'll be
full
capacity at Tiger Stadium, LSU and Southern University. So look out. Smiley Anders was on the field October 31st, 1959, when your high school classmate, Billy Ab Cannon, raced 89 yards to beat Ole Miss. You've told the story, but it's worth telling again, Smiley.
Yeah, I was spotting for United Press International wire service. The photographer, of course, was busy with his camera, and I would tell him who the players were and the yards gained, and you know, fill him in. I kept notes. I was a journalism grad student at that time, and they hired me, I think, $25 to do that. So we were right on the sidelines, and he was getting some. The game was supposed to be over. Ole Miss was leading 3-0, and so he went down in the fourth quarter to get some color shots. He was really shooting up in the stands. They were, Ole Miss was waving those big Confederate flags and that kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, you know, kind of a routine punt. And here comes Kevin looking like a locomotive and shedding guys right and left. And I forgot I was supposed to be working. I'm going, yay, Billy, go on, you know. And very unprofessional. The guy got really irritated with me, you know. But, yeah, we made it. We got a beautiful shot. He came up right by the sideline. We were like the east sidelines, and he came right by us. The guy got a great shot. And
we- All right, we do have to take a break, but we'll have another segment with Smiley Anders. 877-217-5757, your Talk Louisiana number, and we're back after this timeout for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Still time to talk with Smiley Anders. If you're so inclined, 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Hippolyte on Jefferson, you are on the air with Smiley Anders. Good morning, Dr. Landry.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Smiley. How are you? How are you all today?
Doing great.
Doing fine.
Well, Smiley, I can't tell you how much I enjoy your newspaper. I get the morning every day, and after I read your column, I'll read the rest of the paper.
Oh, well, thank you, Doctor. I appreciate that.
And I'm real familiar with your neighborhood. When I was a kid back in 43, I delivered the Times-Picayune to you around the whole Spanish town road at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
On my bicycle. I would ride from City Park all the way down, get my newspaper, and then Spanish Town's a beautiful place, and you make it more beautiful. And
we're very lucky to have a home here.
Yeah, well, thank you, Dr. Landry. And, you know, some of us still get papers at our doorsteps, but, of course, many now consume it online, and journalism has changed. And, unfortunately, there are fewer journalists now than there were 30 or 40 years ago. Smiley, what's your assessment of where the craft of journalism is right now?
Well, I think there will always be a demand for information, no matter how we get it. But I think it's changing. It's inevitable there will be changes. But I'm just concerned about the gatekeepers who strive to see that the facts are true, and who truth doesn't really seem to be as important as it used to be. We've got people with very strong political views doing what they call news. It's not really, it's propaganda. And so we have to really guard against that, and regardless of how it's disseminated, whether it's print or on TV or radio or the internet or whatever, but that concerns me.
877-217-5757 for Smiley Gray Anders Jr. Willie in St. Gabriel. Willie, you're on with Smiley.
Yes, a comment, please. I see where Southern and LSU is going to play, you said, next year.
Yes, sir.
It would have been nice had they gotten together in the 60s. Because Southern was extremely deep in talent. And I'm thinking today LSU will probably prevail over Southern because of lack of depth of Southern's talent.
All right. Well, back in the day, Southern had great players like Mel Blunt and Harold Carmichael. And go down the list. Ken Ellis, and Robert Tank Holmes, they were all playing there at the same time. And they probably would have been competitive. LSU was pretty good then, too. But as we know, Smiley, when you were going to LSU in the early 60s, in late 50s, there were how many black people going to school at LSU at that time?
I think around my senior year, we had some ladies who were teachers who had gone to the courts because they couldn't get a certain course at any other school but LSU. So we had, I'm guessing, a handful of black older teachers who took some classes, and that was it. There were no undergraduates whatsoever.
Isn't that something?
And it was strictly segregated.
Well, a few weeks ago, we had some members of the 1961 LSU baseball team, which won the SEC title, and a story involving that team is one that is worth some enterprising journalist pursuing. The 61 team was not allowed to participate in the NCAA tournament. They only lost five games that year, but the SEC champions from LSU were not allowed to participate in the NCAA tournament 60 years ago because they might play some teams with black athletes. That's how things were six decades ago. Susan in Walden. Susan, you're on with Smiley. Good morning to you.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Susan.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to tell Smiley thank you for making the last years of my father's life so enjoyable. He used to just die laughing at some of the things he read in your column. He had moved to Baton Rouge after Katrina. He was 85. And for 10 years, he was an avid reader of your column.
That makes you feel good. Thank you, Susan.
I'm so touched. Thank you so much for sharing it with me. I'm always delighted to hear that people enjoy the column. It sometimes amazes me that they do. So. And actually, I don't actually write it. It's everybody who contributes, of course, writes it. That's kind of my dirty little secret. That it's not really my column. It belongs to everybody who sends in little jokes and stories and nostalgia and whatever.
Well, you are a staple, and Smiley's far from the finish line. And if you'd like to get in under the wire with us today, 877-217-5757. I mentioned Smiley's birth date is November 20th. He shares a birthday with Joe Biden, the President of the United States, born November 20th, 1942.
Smiley, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Smiley's November 20, 1937.
And, well, I'll give Joe a call. We'll get together.
Well,
Joe
came to Louisiana a few weeks ago, even though most members of our congressional delegation, except for Troy Carter and Bill Cassidy, have yet to acknowledge that he won a fair election, Smiley.
Yeah, that's. I was speaking about the vaccination earlier and mentioned stupidity. I think that would probably apply here as well, but, you know, there's not much you can do about that. You know, you just shake your head in wonderment and, you know.
When you were writing business back in the 60s, segregation was a factor and a reality in life. Did business people even give it a second thought then, or was that just the way things were?
There was a lot of the way things were. There were some people who were concerned about it. It just didn't seem fair to exclude this many people. And it was, of course, harmful for the economy. I was with the Chamber of Commerce, and we were beginning to recruit black business people, and we had a number of business people resign from the Chamber because of that, and there was some strong feelings, and you have to think we've made some progress in race relations. Not nearly enough, of course.
that's an understatement, no doubt. That is true then and now. But we've commented that when you were working for the Farm Bureau, which was still right where it is now on Airline Highway, November 22, 1963, when Smiley was a lad of 26, President Kennedy's killed on a Friday afternoon like this one. And you went to Chris's bar to watch and try to get some perspective on the world.
I was in my car when I heard the news and didn't call into work or anything. I just went kind of in a daze. Just went to Chris's and sat there and had fish bowls with beer and watched a little black and white TV above the bar and several of my friends who also worked with. I didn't work downtown. I happened to be downtown. I think I'd been told lunch or something. And my friends started coming in, guys who worked downtown, and we sat there and never really said much to each other and just watched it and wondered what was going to happen to the country. I think it was kind of like the feeling you got January 6th of this year, like, are we going to survive this? And you have to always be concerned about keeping a democracy. And sometimes it looks like it's on really shaky ground.
What were your thoughts about January 6th of this year?
It was an abomination, and to try to minimize it or make it anything but what it was, an insurrection, is reprehensible. And I'd like to see all those people locked up, and I'm afraid we won't see nearly as many locked up as should be. I think we'd do them a world of good to spend some time in a federal pen.
Well, Smiley, we'll be talking again come November 20th, I fully expect and hope, and for both of us. And it's always great to catch up with you. Today is 42 years of the column. A listener notes not only Joe Biden and Smiley Anders, born on November 20, 1937 for Smiley, 1942 for President Biden, but also born on 1942, 20 November, was a fellow named Norman Greenbaum. Do you remember him?
Norman Greenbaum, yes. That
Spirit in the Sky.
Yeah, right.
A Jewish guy singing about Jesus.
Wonder. Yeah.
Yeah. Katie Ann, can we pull up Norman Greenbaum, who was born on Smiley's fifth birthday in 1942?
Wow.
Amazing. We still hear this all these years later. Norman Greenbaum, Spirit in the Sky, number 3 in 1970. Thanks, Smiley. Love you. Keep going.
All right, Dave. All right.
Turn with Peter Coleman after this quick timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We turn the page and are joined by Professor of Psychology and Education at Columbia University, Peter Coleman. His latest work is important, The Way Out, How to Overcome Toxic Polarization. And Professor Coleman, it's a pleasure to share the microphone with you.
Oh, thank you, Jim. Thanks for inviting me on.
The United States has an enormous partisan divide. We've had it for a long time, but not quite like this, have we?
Well, yeah, the measures tell us that this is political polarization in the country has been increasing for over 50 years. So there's a long-term pattern here, but it's obviously gotten to an extreme rate of, you know, basically where people are feeling contempt for members of the other political party, you know, vilifying them. And it has gotten to a state of what I call toxicity, which is making people sick. It's, you know, it's dividing the family, it's dividing community members. It's, you know, I hear these stories every day where people feel like they've lost touch with someone. They just can't talk to them anymore. It's gotten to a proportion that's making us all sick in our families and in our communities.
I'm surprised that former President Trump, is not mentioned more in your book. He's certainly in there, but some people lay all the blame at him. Is he the culprit?
Well, you know, Trump's approach to the presidency was to play the divisions and to mobilize his base, against another, half of the country. But this polarization that we're experiencing today, as I said, is, you know, started in the mid-1970s. You know, it then had another wave in the 1990s when really in D.C. we saw kind of politics as war become the mode, where people really just started to vilify the other side and, you know, obstruct the other side and, you know, refuse to work with them. So this is a long-term pattern. It's happening in communities, bottom-up, and it's happening in D.C., you know, top-down. And Donald Trump, in some ways, inflamed that because he saw the frustrations in half the country, and he tapped into those frustrations and, to some degree, weaponized those for political purposes. But he's not the only cause of this. He definitely poured gasoline on a fire, but the fire was burning well before he showed up.
877-217-5757 for Peter Coleman. The book is The Way Out, How to Overcome Toxic Polarization. And another listener notes that a lot of this now is also credited to the fight to keep Robert Bork off the U.S. Supreme Court in the mid-'80s. And that was a fight so intense that Bork is now a verb. You were Borked. But... That was a heated matchup as President Reagan lost one to a majority in the Senate that was held by the Democratic Party then. But is that one of the seminal moments that when we look back at the division we have in our country right now?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think, yes, the you know, late 70s, early 80s were a pivotal time when you started to see, you know, the rhetoric and the hostility between the different party members increase. I think really what sort of set the stage for it, to be frank, is, you know, the late 1960s, early 70s, there was a lot of cultural tumult in America, right? There were four or more political assassinations, Martin Luther King, you know, Kennedy's, you know, Malcolm X. There was legislation like Roe v. Wade, which was, you know, very divisive. There was a very unpopular war and a movement against that. And there was cultural revolution. And all of those things kind of shook our society. And what you see is a settling about 10 years later into this divisiveness between more conservative folks who want the status quo or a return to earlier times, or progressive folks who are demanding change. And that's, you know, really it was the destabilization of that era that brought this fight, this political fight. Some of it was brought on by particular actors like Newt Gingrich, for example. Newt Gingrich famously changed when he was Speaker of the House in the mid-1990s. He changed the work week in Congress from 5 days to 3 days and said to his caucus, don't move here, stay in your home states, don't fraternize with the other side. And in doing so, he kind of removed the socialization that used to happen between members of Congress and their families when they all grew up together in the same place. So, you know, there are turning points like that that really turn the heat up on how easy it is to vilify the other side. But as I said, the roots of it start mm-hmm. back in the 1960s.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Peter Coleman, Professor Coleman's book, The Way Out, How to Overcome Toxic Polarization. Tom on Bluebonnet asks if the media have been complicit in this. People like Rush Limbaugh and others, have they fanned the flames?
Yeah, definitely both social media and to some degree mainstream media, not just right-wing media, but mainstream media, I think are part of the problem, because they recognize that there's money to be made in outrage, right? That the more you can outrage an audience, the more they kind of get addicted. In fact, there's research on this that says that, you know, outrage and the need for revenge triggers like a pleasure center in the brain, much like, you know, narcotics do. And both the media recognize this, you know, at a time when getting people's attention is the main commodity and oftentimes part of the business model of media, you see more and more the need to outrage your audience in order to keep their attention. And that's happened on right-wing radio, but it's also, frankly, happened on MSNBC, and it's happened on Breitbart and Fox. And And on social media, right? The social media platforms are oftentimes really fed by the extreme voices that are outraged. I think I recently saw a statistic that 80% of the content put out on Twitter is put out by about 10% of the participants, and they're usually the more extreme outraged voices.
Dr. Coleman is a professor of psychology as well as education, and he does have a chapter that is deep in detail about what he just spoke about called Attracted to Conflict. And before we take a call or two or three, is that part of the human condition, that as much as we say we're averse to conflict, just like we supposedly don't like negative ads, but conflict is an attraction whether we want to acknowledge it or not?
Yeah, definitely under certain conditions. When we feel, destabilized or threatened, but, and life gets more complicated and more demanding and more exhausting, we are inclined to conflict. And under those conditions, what we like is moral clarity. We like simplicity. We like, they're bad, we're good, they're coming after us. So we're sort of seduced by that experience, particularly, as I said, when we're fatigued, when we're frustrated, when we're angry. And particularly over the last, year and a half with COVID, with a spike in awareness of racial injustice, with, the political divisiveness that's happening in our country, there is a heightened sense of threat that people are experiencing. And under those conditions, we look for somebody to blame. And usually it's easier to blame them, all of them, and not ourselves or our group.
James in Metairie. James, you're on with Dr. Peter Coleman. Hi, James.
Hi, Jim. Good morning to you and your guest. I'm looking at an article on TBS.org about 3 weeks ago. 4 in 10 Republicans say they do not plan to get vaccinated. That's about 41% say they will not get vaccinated, Republicans. And only 4% of Democrats say they do not plan to get vaccinated. This is beyond budgets and the border. This is about public health.
What about the divide we have there? And James, I don't think he's exaggerating. Those numbers are accurate. But obviously one party is more reluctant to get vaccinated, people who are members of that party, than those of the other major party. What do you think, Dr. Coleman?
Well, again, it's not a coincidence, because what's really interesting and problematic for me is that these kinds of crises, like a global pandemic like this, usually will unite a country. A country, a nation will come together and see this as a threat to all of us, and will unite around, fighting the fight to rid ourselves of a pandemic. But in this case, the pandemic was weaponized. And it was weaponized to some degree by both sides, but definitely Donald Trump's refusal to acknowledge it and then say it was a hoax. And, that created the conditions on the right where people felt they had to take a loyalty pledge to Trump and agree with that. And that still resonates through the Republican Party.
All right. Quickly, Phil and Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on. Please be brief. Phil, go for it.
Good morning, gentlemen. Isn't there a way that this isn't violating the broadcast license? I don't understand how people can keep their broadcast license and broadcast the crap that they do.
All right. Well, there is no longer a fairness doctrine. Back in the day when we had it, this was before Ronald Reagan, was it a better world then as far as getting some semblance of balance, whether you're looking at it from the left or the right side of the spectrum?
Yeah, they're definitely, the Fairness Doctrine helped rein in misinformation. And I think things like the Dominion lawsuit against Fox and some of the right-wing media organizations can start to serve that purpose. But we definitely are need for those kinds of guardrails in mainstream media and in social media, because they don't really exist there as well.
Thank you, Dr. Peter Coleman. The book is The Way Out. And congrats to Katie Ann McDonald, our producer, who's headed for Eugene, Oregon for the finals. She ran the 800 last week in 201.06, fifth best in LSU history. Keep going. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provide signature support. Until next week, stay tuned.